This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He is an NFL insider that I know many of you are familiar with. He does it for Sirius XM Radio. Now you can get him on Twitter at Kaplan NFL, Kaplan with a C, NFL on Twitter. Adam Kaplan joining me right now. Hey, Adam, how are you?
Sean, good to be with you this Sunday night as we will wrap up tomorrow night. The second preseason week, I was with the Colts, and this week at home, and I'll tell you what, they're a team that I think they feel really good about their quarterback, Andrew Luck. They had the Ravens in this week, and they'll play tomorrow night, but the bottom line is, I think if you're a Colts fan listening to us tonight, you got to feel pretty good about the attention to detail when it comes to their offensive line. This is the best offensive line, Sean, that the Colts have had since Andrew Luck was drafted in the first round in 2012.
Well, and obviously that group led by Quentin Nelson, now the sixth overall pick in the draft, Adam. So let's start there with the Colts. Let's start with Andrew Luck. How did Andrew Luck look, and what's the optimism level with Andrew Luck, with respect to Andrew Luck, in that organization right now?
Yeah, Sean, when I spoke to the Colts in the offseason, they were reasonably optimistic that Andrew would take all the first-team reps when training camp started, and by golly, that's what he did. He looks great. Looks normal. Jacoby Brissett is his backup. In addition to the offensive line, they added Ryan Grant, the former Washington Redskins receiver, who was diagnosed with a bad ankle in a physical in free agency, and it healed up. He was fine, and the Colts passed him the physical. He's been great, they tell me. And then, as you mentioned, they drafted Quentin Nelson in the first round, and Brade Smith was their second-round pick, also a guard. Now they're playing him at right tackle. The right tackle job, I'm told, is wide open. The other four spots are certainly filled, but that's okay. I mean, they feel pretty good. They've got pretty good competition there. And the other thing that they have is depth on the offensive line. I wouldn't worry about their offense. It's their defense, which is clearly in transition. They're changing schemes. They were previously, for the last couple of years, at 34 front. They're running a 43, and that takes time to get that changed around. So I think in the AFC South, I think the Colts will certainly be more competitive with Andrew Luck back, and now he has an offensive line.
And that's a tougher division. I want to ask you about the division in just a second, Adam, but just sticking with the Colts for one more question. What are your thoughts on how Chris Ballard has done so far his first couple years there and how they're set up? I know they did the trade to move back to six last year. How do you think they're set up to do next year, and what's your assessment of Chris Ballard so far?
Yeah, Sean, in talking with Ballard the past couple days, it seems to me he's a guy that he's going to build this roster through the draft, not through free agency. He'll supplement every now and then, but he's taking the long-term view, not what we call sort of get-rich scheme quickly, where you just sign a bunch of free agents and you hope to get to 8-8, 9-7, kind of like the Jets did under Mike McCagney in the first year, and it never works.
Yep.
It'll get people interested early on, but it has no long-term impact and sustainability. And then Chris is building it really the right way. This is the way you do it. I think my sense is next year that's when he'll start devoting more draft capital to the defense, but you got to build it with the offensive line and protect Andrew Luck, something they've not really been able to do very well, but right now it looks pretty good.
Adam Kaplan joining me on CBS Sports Radio. You mentioned the AFC South. I'm here in Houston, so everybody here is thrilled over the prospects of a Deshaun Watson era upon us. What does a healthy Andrew Luck and now a healthy Deshaun Watson do for the AFC South, just in terms of its profile among the other seven divisions in the NFL?
I'll tell you, Sean, last year when Deshaun Watson tore his ACL, it was shocking. Obviously, it was in a practice. It really changed the focus of what the Texans could do, because we know with J.J. Watt getting up there, you could question at 29 years old if he's the same player. You remember he broke his leg last year, so he was put on injured reserve. And you have to wonder if he's going to be the same player. I think right now when you go back to Deshaun Watson, and yes, he's healthy. He looked great. Yeah, by the way, he looked really good against the Niners. He had a bunch of drops there. I think there were at least three drops in the game. He looked good. The big question, though, and it certainly on paper, talking to teams that have already scouted them for the regular season, a couple of personnel guys brought up to me that when they look at their offensive line, they really struggle to see this thing come together. Depth not really good. Offensive line, talent-wise, isn't great. Really, other than Nick Martin and Zach Fulton, who was a starter for the Chiefs, it's not great. Santrell Henderson, they're taking a flyer on him. A left tackle with Davenport, you got to question that. Calamente, who comes over from the Saints, this is just not a great offensive line. But Bill O'Brien is such a great play caller. And he, as you noticed, they play Watson a lot in shotgun, and that'll help him. And they do have Lamar Miller, who's better than average back. I think the Texans certainly could get things going. They're certainly a team that's going to probably throw in the ball more than they want to, just because I don't know if they're overall the most talented team. But that division with Watson back, Luck back, Mariota back and healthy, and, of course, the Jaguars, who I was with the Vikings earlier this week, they absolutely dominated the Viking offensive line in practice and in the game yesterday. I think that's a more competitive division than it was last season.
Okay, good. I'm glad you were in – I had written down to – I didn't know you were in Minnesota with the Vikes.
So I've been everywhere, almost this whole country, and I've got one more trip left. It's crazy.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Minnesota, because actually one of the first bullet points I had written down was Minnesota. My take on Minnesota, Adam, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, is that they may have a better roster now, especially with the acquisition of Cousins, although Keenum was definitely serviceable, better than serviceable last year. They may have a better overall roster now, but might not have better results than they had last year, just because it's really hard to go 13-3 in the NFL in any season, regardless of how good your talent is. Even the best teams don't go 13-3. What are your thoughts? Could we see – is it possible we see a more talented and better Minnesota team just in terms of their quality of play, but a regression record-wise for this team this year?
Well, defensively, they're going to be dominant just like the Jaguars are. And remember, they added Sheldon Richardson, the veteran defensive tackle, play the three technique.
Yep.
Their defense ought to be great. The problem offensively they've got in the interior of their offense. Remember, Pat Elflein, their starting center, had dual surgeries, ankle and shoulder. They're hopeful for week one. He has not practiced. He has not done anything with the football team other than rehab and do some individual work. They lost their left guard, Nick Easton, for the season after neck surgery. And then Mike Remmers, who could play right tackle guard. I'm told he's going to return to practice within the next 2 weeks, so he'll be ready for week one. Their interior, they're concerned about it. They're actually down two linemen now. So I expect them to do something before the regular season starts, whether it's wait to see what veteran gets cut or whether they need to make a trade. They're going to have to add two interior linemen, a swing guard center, and probably have to upgrade at left guard because Tom Compton is better six offensive lineman than starter.
Adam, you just mentioned that you've been to a bunch of camps and you've been all over the place. Is there a particular camp you went to where you maybe went in thinking one thing about a team, but because of what you saw, folks you talked to, you came away with a drastically different impression, good or bad, from that team?
Here's what I'll say, and I'm not saying the Jets are going to make the playoffs, because people sometimes run crazy with some of the stuff that I say, but I'll tell you this, their talent level is way better than it was the past couple years.
Hmm.
Their draft picks look pretty good, and quarterback competition has been great in camp. I spent two days with the Jets and Redskins at the Redskins training camp, and Sam Darnold has looked good in the first two preseason games. In fact, Teddy Bridgewater, Sean, has looked even better than Darnold,
yeah.
And no one's talking about him starting week one, and I don't know why they're not giving him a chance. They really should. Their receiver core is not a bunch of home run hitters, but they're fairly deep there. The one issue they have on offense is their offensive line. They're all back, but it's not a really talented offensive line. I know they feel great about their secondary, one of the best young secondaries in the NFL at safety, and then you add Tremaine Johnson, who's a veteran at corner, who 3 years ago had a huge year with interceptions. So I could see that team, if Darnold's the starter and he plays well this season, I think they could be 8-8. Or 9-7. I think they could be a big surprise. Hey, listen, last year, who in the world was talking about the Rams last season at this point? No one was.
Yeah.
No one thought they could even come close to a playoff team in Sean McVay's first year. So there's going to be that team or two that no one's talking about. Maybe the Bears or the Jets. Someone's going to make the playoffs that we didn't expect.
Well, and especially in the AFC. You know, the NFC has some monsters over there. I feel like the AFC is, as it's been the last couple years, maybe a little bit top-heavy. So it's ripe for that. You bring up Bridgewater, Adam. How do you think this ends up for Teddy Bridgewater? I don't say long term, like years down the road, but just I feel like he was picked up as almost an afterthought for the Jets, And because everybody talked about McCown is going to place hold and then it's going to be Darnold. But Bridgewater and Darnold's performance have kind of shaken up the calculus a little bit. Could Teddy Bridgewater have played himself into being an asset where somebody might give something up to have him as their quarterback? Maybe depending on how, if there's an injury or something like that?
Well, Sean, he has a very tradable contract. It's really a one-year deal for $5.5 million, and the Jets already paid him with workout bonus. So the only thing that he has in his contract to earn him more money, he's got $9 million in incentives that would be based on playing time and performance. He's got a very tradable contract. And to me, I think when you look at it, if a team loses a starting quarterback or a number two quarterback over the next 2 weeks, to me, he's the most tradable because Josh McCown's at 39 years old. You'd rather have him as a transitional quarterback in case Darnold's not ready. Teddy, to me, is a guy that looks like he's healthy. Talking to the Jets, they said he had a really good OTA sessions. So overall, I think you're kind of onto something. I think he's certainly going to have some value. But right, we've seen a lot of injuries, but not a lot of quarterback injuries so far.
No, the irony of Teddy Bridgewater being traded to a team because of a late in camp injury would be, considering it was his injury that led to Sam Bradford being traded, would be something you can't script, obviously.
It's amazing. 2 years ago, I remember working when I was at ESPN, I was working on that story, and the Eagles had such leverage, and that's what Mike Maccagnan would have here. He's in the driver's seat here. He's got Teddy Bridgewater or Josh McCown or a tradable, really Teddy more because he's younger and he's got a much cheaper contract.
Yep.
McCown's getting $10 million this season, which is fully guaranteed. So I think when you really – actually, $5 million is guaranteed at signing. But I think right now with Teddy Bridgewater and his contract and the way that he looks, and his tape is very good, I'm told. So I think at the end of the four preseason games, if a team needs a backup quarterback, he would be guy to target.
Yeah, and the Jets could use picks. They had to give up picks to move up to get Darnold. Absolutely. Adam Kaplan joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Last one before I let you go, Adam. The helmet rule, the helmet tackling rule, the crown of the helmet rule. We saw it. I was covering the Texans game last night between the game with the 49ers last night when, I forget, number 31 on the Niners, Raheem Mostert, I think.
Raheem Mostert.
He made a great play on special teams. He stuck Tyler Irvin just as he caught the ball. It looked like a textbook tackle up until the last year or so, at least. A textbook tackle, and they call a crown of the helmet. It was a terrible call, in my opinion, a terrible call. We saw the Hall of Fame game was just littered with calls that were not just, I felt, incorrect, but also punitive just in terms of the penalty and what these teams get out of it. That's my take on it. I want your take on the helmet rule.
Yeah, look, I talked to several coaches on my tour. I've been on tour for 3 weeks, and the defensive coaches, they're very concerned because players have played the same way over the years. Like, it's one thing when the league started, for safety reasons years ago, started to adjust the rules so you had to adjust the way that you would hit, that you couldn't hit helmet to helmet. And that was an adjustment that the players complained, by the way, for a couple weeks and it was over with it. It was something they could adjust to fairly easily. This one is not. I've talked to current players. I've talked to former players. I talked to Ben Lieber, the former Vikings linebacker, the past couple days, and Ben made it very clear that this is going to be very difficult for players because you've played the same way your whole life. Even if you're trying not to lead with your helmet, it's hard when you're running full speed not to lower your helmet because you can't really – it's hard to turn away. You got to look at the target. That's the thing that's going to be hard. And remember, it doesn't matter. If you lower your head, you initiate contact, it is a flag. That is – the league has said it's very clear. The only reason why a helmet – is part of the game now is to protect your head. That's it. They want it out of the game, and they're not relenting on this situation.
Yeah, if this thing, trickles into the regular season, we know in week one, if this thing is still being administered the same way it is in the preseason, that there's going to be a game that gets, or a critical turning point in a game that's going to wind up being decided.
It's going to happen in the regular season. And you're going to, those calls to New York and to the officiating office Monday morning are going to be nasty.
No doubt.
And it's unfortunate. I know the fans are very upset. Richard Sherman, you brought up Raheem Mostert play. Sherman commented on Twitter about that play. I mean, it's only going to get worse. And, man, the fans are not happy, but you can't change rules in midstream, and we'll see what happens here.
At Kaplan NFL, Kaplan with a C, NFL, and you can catch him on SiriusXM. Adam, I've always enjoyed your work, and it's really good to get to talk to you, and I hope to get to do it again with you soon. Thank you very much.
Sean, anytime. Thank you.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.